well. Welcome to Fin and Feather. I'm Denton Pierce, and I'm sitting in for Eric here this evening on Fin and Feather, where we're going to talk about outdoor activities and life in Southeast Alaska. And my guest here this evening is Warren Christensen. Warren, how you doing?
Well, pretty good. I'm going to be very interested in this. This is the first time I've been on the air since I had my Classics with Chris show.
Well, that brings up an interesting topic, because I used to listen to Classics with Chris here on Raven Radio quite regularly. And in fact, that program in a very direct way was what brought me into the realm of active involvement here at Raven Radio. I remember in about, late 1982, I came down here to the radio station to watch what you were doing with that program. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And I sat here in the air room with you and was really intrigued with what was going on with the radio station. And shortly after that, I took my air training, and I've been here at Raven Radio ever since. So I thank you for introducing me to Raven Radio.
Well, you're very welcome, and we like to have veterans like you around.
Okay. Very good, then. Warren, how long have you lived here in Sitka?
Since June 14th, 1951.
1951, then.
Mm-hmm.
The summer.
Right.
Okay. How is it that you came to Southeast Alaska?
Well, I had lived on a lake in Minnesota near a little town called Hinckley. And there's a lake was not very big, about 3 miles long. And I was very interested in sailboats. I built several of them and had a rebuilt a 18-foot launch, and was just nuts about sailboats. And then when I went into the Air Force after college, I
when was that? When did you go into the Air Force?
I went into the Air Force in 1943. January of 1943 is when I was sworn in. But I didn't get into active service until about a few months later. I mean, standing by.
Mm-hmm. So how did that experience end up getting you to Southeast Alaska?
Well, Just after I got my brand new shiny second lieutenant's bars, why, like many of the other people in my training squadron, in fact, I think it was about 28 out of 30 got married and had their leave, and including me, and we got leave just after we got our bars. Anyway, why, we were living in Clearwater Beach, Florida, and because we wanted to be on the water, and they had shrimp boats that were no longer allowed to, we had to use motors now, but previously they had to use just sails. And Faith and I were walking down along the quay there, and
Faith was your wife?
Faith was my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And and she had it was very interested too in sailing, and I looked at this 35-foot catch. It was quite rotten. It had been sitting there for a good many years, but I looked it over and walked up and down, and I said to Faith, I could build that, and she said, let's. So that started the whole thing.
So your experience with boats in Minnesota, where you grew up then, led to your decision that you could build a boat, huh?
That's right.
Okay.
And so then we agreed that I would save my money, allowed myself $25 a month to live on when I was overseas. Of course, the Army provided the, uniform,
food and lodging and all that.
All that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going to get a job, and we'd save our money, and when I got out of the Air Force, we would build a sailboat of some kind and sail to Alaska, which we had decided already to do.
But why Alaska?
Well, it was, of course, a territory in those days, and it just intrigued me. I knew that there was lots of water in Southeast, a lot of had read a lot of Alaska stories, and I just figured that I wanted to be someplace in southeast Alaska. Although I considered Anchorage, but, well, that's another story.
Not enough water up there.
Yeah.
Okay. So so you decided you were going to build this boat.
Yes.
That's right? Did you actually do it?
Well, what happened was that I was I was a captain at that point in time. And I was
captain in the Air Force?
Captain in the Army Air Force.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Yeah. Into the Army Air Force.
Yes.
Anyway.
Okay.
I was the. Well, I had effectively one day and three free because of the odd schedules. We would fly almost all night, one of them, and got the next day off pretty much. So we decided we'd just start there. And there was a creek called Big Walnut Creek and then the Scioto River. And the Big Walnut Creek ran into the Scioto, which ran into the Ohio, which ran into the Mississippi, which also runs into the sea, and also goes up to Minnesota.
It's not a direct link to the ocean, but it's close, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing of it was that this little creek had a normal channel of about 3 inches. And we had we built a kayak, and it flooded, not much. It flooded about from 3 inches to maybe 3 feet deep. We took this kayak on a trip and had our dog in the center. And I looked up and there were some branches of some trees, and here were some corn stalks in the branches at about 8 feet above us. And I said to Faith, uh-oh, look at that. This thing must really flood sometimes. And so the rest of then we decided that we'd get a place somewhere along the Big Walnut Creek and build the Tantalus or build the sailboat. We didn't know what name or how big or what it was going to be.
It's the boat that is now the Tantalus.
The boat that is now the Tantalus.
Well, tell us what the Tantalus is.
Well, the Tantalus is a gaff rig schooner, a rather older type design, 46 feet long, 14-foot beam, which is quite beamy for a ship of that length, and it carries under full sail 1,175 square feet of sail.
Mm-hmm.
And a schooner, incidentally, is two-masted, with the aftermast being the tallest mast, as opposed to a ketch, which is just the reverse. And so to do this, we went to a farmer. He had some big oak trees, about 3 feet plus in diameter. And we bought oak trees on the stump, and then with a sweet saw, a big old hand saw, Faith took one end and I took the other, and we sawed several trees down, made a deal with the sawmill owner to cut them up and adjust what we wanted. He wanted a planer, and we needed to have dressed lumber, so I bought him a planer, and then we took it out in lumber, and I worked in the mill, too. So we got the lumber for the Tantalus that way. Beautiful white oak.
Hmm.
Beautiful white oak, and of course, it was since I was working in the mill, I made darn sure that for the stuff we wanted. You see, the Tantalus is double-planked. It's 5/8 white oak diagonal, and then heavy impregnated canvas and a lot of gook on the canvas over that. And then over the top, we bought commercial inch cypress and 1x3 cypress.
So you built it right there in the farmyard?
Well, yeah, it was a little settlement called Edgewater Park. And outside of Columbus, Ohio.
And it became Edgewater when the flood showed up, right?
Well, one time the flood came up and we had the thing about half built. It almost accidentally launched us.
Okay.
But, yes, it would flood, at high floods, it would probably go eight feet deep, something like that, in that area. And when I built it, I designed it. Did a lot of studying in the library and so forth on boat design, and read a lot of books and stuff. And I designed it so that I could add the keel later. The keel of the Tantalus is 6 tons, and it's built up with an I-beam bolted onto the bottom and concrete and scrap steel and all sorts of stuff. But anyway, so that the ship, when it was ready to be actually launched, only drew 34 inches of water, although normally now it draws 6 feet, because, of course, it didn't have any keel on, although I knew we were going to go around a lot, so I put a quarter-inch strip of iron on the bottom of the keel.
Well, how did you actually launch it there on Big Walnut Creek?
Well, I hired a big crane from Columbus, which was about 15 miles away, and it launched it and sat in the mud for a while there. And then the first flood that came along, I had a bunch of high school kids all lined up. Well, they were all real excited about it. They were going to go down. And on the day before Thanksgiving, the water came up. It didn't come up very much, but it came up, and we started down. The temperature was about 25 above, and my ambitious high school kids said, "Well, the first thing you have to do is slosh the decks." So they tipped some water before I could stop them. So immediately it turned to ice.
Okay. And, so they pulled it out into the stream? Is that how it worked?
We pulled it out into the stream, and we started down. Well, we were getting quite a bit of publicity. This was a freak deal, you know, this crazy guy. You know,
well, yeah, I mean, it's not very often that 46-foot sailboats get built in the middle of Ohio, right?
Yeah, and we got about 2 miles, and there was a big flat, and we ran aground and stayed there 2 weeks. And in the meantime, while I had checked, and the channel was very narrow, and there's a railroad bridge about a mile below where we went aground. And I had checked that previously, and I figured we had 6 to 8 inches of clearance to get under it so we had to leave immediately as soon as it would float. Otherwise, the railroad bridge would stop the Tantalus.
Mm-hmm. If the water rose too much.
The water rose too much, and it would crash into it. At the 14th of December that year, 1946, we started out with our crew, and they were all excited and so forth, and the bridge came up, and I thought, oh, ye gods, I got these kids aboard, and if we crash into that bridge and that water is too high, it's going to tip the boat over, and I was just nervous as a dickens. Well, we got under the bridge with 4 to 6 inches to spare. They said all the boys down below, and I steered by lying on my back with a tiller and just enough above my head so I could see the steer. And we got through that one. The next day, we got about 80 miles. And I was really proud of the Tantalus. At one point, there was a bridge that we didn't know it had been built, and they had taken it down. But they left, this is on the Scioto River, they left some piling under the water, and we didn't know it, of course, and we hit it, whimbo, and the ship leaned over, and I yelled down below, how much water is coming in? And there isn't any water, but what did you do? And this old carnival man, who was our engineer, had fallen across the spark plugs. And he got off in a big hurry. But later on, we found out that the only thing that had happened was that there was a big scrape of about a 32nd of an inch of mm-hmm. wood had scraped off.
Very good. Well, you got this thing down the Ohio mm-hmm. and ultimately down the Mississippi, am I right?
That's right. We went... We got it down to the Ohio, to Portsmouth, and we stayed there and did some more work on the ship. And then after about a month, we started out, and it was flood water again, 46 feet above flood tide on the Ohio River.
Ooh.
And it was quite a we didn't worry about going aground, and when we wanted to tie up at night, I didn't like to run at night, we'd just run over and tie up to a tree.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And watch ourselves, so if the river went down by too much, we'd always see how deep we had under us. And it was quite an adventure going down, and going down the Ohio and all these river towns, and everybody was sort of, this Atlas looked very freakish. It didn't have any paint on the topsides. We went over one dam that they had a signboard and how much the river was, 46 feet above flood stage rising. And we just went right over the dams.
didn't even slow you down, huh?
That's right.
Okay.
And we came down to Portsmouth. And that was where the Ohio, which is where the Mississippi comes in. And then, no, not Portsmouth. I don't think of the name of the town. Kind of a rough river town, quite famous.
Cairo's in there.
Cairo,
that's where it is?
Cairo, Illinois.
Okay.
That's right. And started up the Mississippi.
Going up the Mississippi
this time? Up the Mississippi, no.
Okay.
And
what, you were going back to Minnesota?
Going back to Minnesota. The Mississippi River goes through the Minnesota campus. And
this is at the University of Minnesota?
University of Minnesota.
Okay.
When we got up, and we, after many adventures, we got up there, including hitting the ice in Lake Pepin, on our way up, but Lake Pepin's a big lake in the Mississippi. The tied up and was I was about 3 to 4 blocks from the Minnesota Law School, when I tied up.
So that's where you got your legal education.
That's where
then
I got my legal education.
Okay, and you lived on the boat there.
We lived on the boat, and frozen in the ice every winter that we were there. I have a picture of myself standing alongside the Dauntless with my elbow on the around the rail. And we had a good stove, so that was a lot
so
of fun.
How did you end up getting it down the Mississippi and ultimately up to southeast Alaska?
Well, after a lot of the trouble and work, I got another crane, put a I-beam, H-beam down and filled it full of all sorts of stuff, including some scrap iron, and finally weighed 6 tons. And then I had the crane come and put the Tantalus on top of the I-beam, and then I drilled holes and put it on. Then had a crane much later come and launch us. And after I graduated from law school, and I had just one very small case, and then I took off on Faith and I, and we advertised for crew, and we took off down the Mississippi. It was a real delight and an experience. You get the feeling of going down the heart of the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you know, when these river towns would come up of. I got quite a kick. We stopped in Hannibal, Missouri, which is the the Twain's hometown, and it was all along. And we'd anchor every night, go off, you know, to the side, and put the anchor down, and sometimes the river would come up, but it didn't bother us then. And on down to where it started to get warm, stopped at Vicksburg for a couple days. To do a little work on the boat, where by that time, when we left Minnesota, the river had already started to freeze, and there was ice out about a quarter of the way from each side, but it was clear in the middle.
Okay.
And
so you got down to New Orleans ultimately, right?
Yes, we went on down to New Orleans and stayed there to did some more work on the Tantalus, and got acquainted with a fellow who I later sailed to Tahiti with. But then we took off, and we had this crew, and they paid us. We'd advertised, and we charged them $1,000 to take them to Alaska.
Okay. So you went through the Panama Canal.
Panama Canal. which was quite an adventure. The first lock coming in from the Atlantic side has an 80-foot lift, and the tunnels coming in, 8 feet in diameter with all the pressure, and it just bounces the ship around. We had five tires deep on about three places. We had five towers on top of each other for protection.
To keep you from bouncing off the sides.
Off the sides, that's right. And then went on through, stopped at the other side at Panama City, stayed there a short time, got some more provisions, it took off, and started up the coast. And we had many adventures, of course, including one night we were off the coast of El Salvador under full sail. I was sleeping on deck. We had a doctor aboard who was at the wheel, and the wind was getting stronger. All of a sudden, wham! Both masts broke right above the cross trees.
Ooh.
And came tumbling down, and sails all over, and we were about 50 miles offshore. But what was worrying to me was that although the mainmast had broken above our two shrouds from each side, the foremast had broke just below all the shrouds, and it was just whipping like a fishbowl. And I was scared stiff that it would jump out of the socket where it goes into the keel and go through the hull. And so with, of course, everybody, all hands were up, and they nailed some emergency steps on the mast, which was quite a job with it. The ship was, you know, bouncing all over the place, and got up to the very top. And when I was a Sea Scout in Minnesota, I had learned how to tie a masthead knot, and I had, which is a knot that has four loops at the bottom. When you get done with it, it has four loops. I had a line around my waist, and the only time in my life I ever used it, but that was sure important. We put some emergency rigging on. The mast broke about 10 o'clock at night, and by 3 o'clock in the morning, we're on course and underway with an emergency rig, about a third of our normal sails.
Okay. So so you got that fixed then, right?
Yeah, we got that fixed and went on up and stopped at many of the ports along the way. I always did my own work for clearing, and then got to San Diego. How much time we have left?
You got about six more minutes.
All right. At that point, we stayed at San Diego for the winter and started out again with a new crew headed for Alaska. And we had no fuss going up the coast from San Diego to Seattle. It was a lot of fun. We stopped at, you know, various cities along the way. And at Seattle, headed on up. One of the fellows around here, particularly those that know boats, would get a kick out of this. I had the crew that I picked up in San Diego was not my best crew, and there was one fellow who was a good mechanic, I'll say that for him. we were running up in British Columbia, and I sort of checked these guys pretty heavily, and I said to him, look out, there's a little a rock up there about a half a mile, so give it plenty of wide berth. It was offshore about 300, 400 yards. And I kept an eye on it, and we were headed just about for it. And finally I said, look, you gotta go. You better get over to go to port. And so finally I said, hey, give me the wheel. So I took the wheel, and you could see the swirl by that time. And I did a hard left and did around 60-degree left. And we went by the rock, and you could see it. And I said, gee whiz, Jim, what, you know, you've got to be more careful. And he said, well, that's just a little, I can't be expected to pay attention to every fly speck on the chart.
Yeah, well, you should probably pay attention to the ones that you're going to run aground on, though, right?
Yeah. So we went on in, and stopped at Ketchikan, and I talked to Bob Ziegler and his father and Mike and somebody.
He's an attorney down there,
yes,
right?
Yes, he's an attorney there.
Were you looking for work?
Looking for work, I just was going to test and see how, whether there was room for another attorney, whether I would go in for one of them. I stopped at Wrangell. There's no attorney there, and I thought, well, maybe I could do Wrangell and Petersburg together. And I stopped at Petersburg then, and there was a woman whose brother was a fraternity brother of mine, and she came down to the, and one of the things that I appreciated and gotten a big kick out of was that she bought us a soda, and she didn't have quite enough money, so she charged a nickel.
Did you even know that she was in Petersburg?
Oh, yes. I had known that she was there. And my this friend of mine, her brother had told her I was coming. I went to Juneau and talked to Mike Monagle, talked to Norm Banfield.
More attorneys, right?
More attorneys, right. Mm-hmm. And then decided that, well, I could see lots of opportunities in almost any of these towns. Then we took the Tantalus on to Sitka, and I thought, oh, wow, look at this place. Look at these islands. Look at the coastline and the mountains. And, man, I was just sold on Sitka from the time we came in. And Stockton Webb, I had run into at San Diego. And so he knew why we were coming. I tied up at the Webb Ford float, which is, we're down the, not far from where the grid is now, and decided...
You're on Catlian Street?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this was where we would stay, and I had just, I said, Anchorage, to heck with it. That's...
Yeah. And, understand that completely.
So the next, after I had been there a day or so, I went down and talked to Mr. Brown, who then ran the first bank of Sitka, and he said, well, come on in, I'd like to talk to you. and I said, well, so I did. And he said, before I said anything else, he said, well, sit down. He said, we want you to be the bank's attorney. And I said, whoop.
You hadn't even taken the bar exam yet, had you?
That was right after the bar exam.
Oh, after, okay.
And we want you to be the bank's attorney. We'll recommend you to our client. We've got lots of title work that has to be done, and so forth. And within a month and a half or so, I was an attorney for the city, an attorney for the independent school district, and a number of contractors, and I was just inundated with work. So
sounds like they were pretty starved for an attorney at that point.
Yeah, well, there had been a few attorneys had been here, but they never stayed for one reason or another, and I couldn't see that. So we then Faith and I, my first wife, we were, of course, sounding around, and we took our little skiff that was a skiff of the Tantalus, checked a number of islands, lived on Barry Island for a short time, it's just house sitting, and then we saw the island which is now our home, Christoph Island, and put our stakes on it and homesteaded it, and that's it.
That's very good. Well, I really want to thank you for coming down and being my guest here this evening, Warren, and this is going to be it for Fin and Feather. Thank you for joining us. My name's Denton Pearson. We'll see you later.